This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, where on this week's episode, we're building up to one of the EFL's showpiece events of the season, the Carabao Cup final, in the company of a man who's experienced the joy of lifting the trophy.
You make sure you kiss the cup first and then you lift it above your head. And like you said, make sure you don't drop it over the balcony.
EFL games themselves continue to come and go thick and fast, a bit like managers. We've had five departures in the past week, two of them knee deep in the Sky Bet Championship relegation battle. And keeping the managerial theme, one of the league's longest serving discusses Skybet League One's game of the season so far.
Yeah, a mad game that you can't explain.
And it was a winning start, followed by, well, maybe we should just skip over the detail, for Skybet League Two's latest appointment.
On the pitch, we've got to get it improved and ready to kick on.
It's the official EFL podcast. So, after six rounds, 92 games and 256 goals in this year's competition, this Sunday it all boils down to one final 90 minutes, or maybe 120, or maybe penalties at Wembley Stadium as Chelsea take on Liverpool in the 2022 Carabao Cup final. And joining us to look forward to this showpiece event is a man who hoisted aloft the cup 9 years ago as club captain of Swansea City, Gary Monk. That's a first for the official EFL podcast. We'll have to have a new leaderboard on
sneezes. It was too big an introduction.
Beautiful. Listen, for all those of us who kind of dreamed of being a professional footballer, dreamed of playing in a Wembley final, I wondered if you could share with us what it feels like to do that climb up to the Royal Box, knowing you are going to receive a trophy in your hands a few minutes later.
It's a hard one to describe. I think, obviously, I did it before when we won the playoff final. And I remember counting the steps because I wanted to count how many steps it took. And then by the time we got to the League Cup final, I'd forgotten how many it was. So I can't tell you exactly how many steps, but I did count them on the player final. I think it was like 130 or something like that it was. But no, it's like you said there, you dream of as a kid, you know, when you're in the streets and you're playing with your mates, you'll pretend you're at Wembley and you're playing your headers and volleys and cup games in your heads around the park. And then to actually live that out in real life, yeah, it's a complete honour and a privilege. So the fact that we made it, obviously, being at a club like Swansea as well, which was really unexpected and unexpected for us as well, as players. It was really, I think everyone knows the journey of Swansea and what we achieved there over that period of time. But the League Cup was probably the icing on the cake.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you that. I mean, ever that bit sweeter because you had played through all the four divisions and here you are then in one of the major domestic cup finals as well. I mean, it's a remarkable story actually, Gary, isn't it? The whole period of Swansea's revival and push up the leagues.
It's probably only since I've stopped playing that you have time to sort of reflect back on it and go over kind of what you did achieve, you know. And it's not the most glamorous career, but I've said it all along, to become a professional footballer in itself and have longevity in a career is something to be proud of. But to achieve what we achieved, like you said, to play in, you know, I'm really proud that I've played in every single league, you know, come up through the leagues. Even when I was younger, I started at the bottom league, went to Southampton as a youngster, didn't quite make it, came all the way back down to League Two again, and then made our way all the way back up to the Premier League. And to not only just play in the Premier League, but to win a major trophy, which was so unexpected. None of us expected it. And even in that cup run that we had that year, you know, having to face Liverpool in the quarterfinals and Chelsea in the semi-finals over two legs, even then you're not expecting it really, even though you're going out there determined to try and get there. But as soon as we got to the final, it was a dream come true. But then, trying to make sure that we nailed the final and won it, which we did comfortably in the end. It was a like I said, it was an icing on the cake for that journey that Swansea had been on and everyone involved with it.
And just to go back to that sort of walk up, and obviously you'd come off the bench because you were club captain, but Ash Williams had was captain on the day and you came off the bench and all the rest of it. Did you, I won't say practice it, but you clearly discussed how you were going to do it, going up together and one on either side of the cup and lifting it just to make sure there was no drop in it with the eyes of the world on you or anything like that?
Yeah. Like I said, I had some practice a couple of years before that going up there, so I kind of knew what to expect. But Ash didn't really want to do it together originally. He wanted to do it himself. He wanted all the glory, but I was thinking no chance of that. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So, no, we decided that we'd both go up there and we climb the steps. Like I said, I think it was 120 or 130-odd steps, and you don't need that at the end of 90 minutes, I tell you that. But then, and then you lift the cup and, you know, just stood there. I think the best thing about it is it's kind of a blur. You don't remember all of it, but what you do remember is you're just looking out at your fans. You're looking out from an elevated position and you just look across to your whole side of this Wembley Stadium and you can just see everyone and your staff and your friends, your family. You can see people on the pitch that you know and you recognise, and I think you're just more happy. Well, I remember feeling just more happy for everyone else. Of course, I was proud myself and happy myself, but I think you're just proud for everyone that's involved in that moment, you know, and it means the world to them. You can see it in their celebration when you lift that cup. So you make sure you kiss the cup first and then you lift it above your head. And like you said, make sure you don't drop it over the balcony.
Yeah, too right. And try not to kiss it on the same side that Ash Williams has slavered on either, I would suggest. Do you ever watch it back? You know, you're having you might be having a bad day or something. Do you ever sort of nip on YouTube and sort of watch the goals back and the sort of cup hoist or anything, or is it compartmentalized away?
Yeah, not really. I tell you what tends to happen is you'll end up watching, you know, something on Sky or whatever it may be, and they'll go back over like the highlights of it. I know the playoffs have been on quite a few times, and then the League Cup will come on, you know, over certain years, and then all of a sudden it'll be your year and it'll replay the highlights of your game, and that's probably then when you sort of pay attention to it and look back here. But of course, I've watched the game back, probably more closer to when we actually won it. Probably a couple of weeks later, I watched the game back and saw it all and unfold. But then, yeah, when you move on a little bit longer, you just see it flash up on TV every now and then, and it's the highlights, and you gravitate towards that. Like the kids will want to watch it or something. They'll say, "Dad, you're on TV when you won the cup." So we end up sitting down and watching it. Yeah, it's good. It's good memories.
Brilliant stuff. And without giving your address away, in case you've got your medal pinned above the telly or something, is it in a prominent place, the actual medal you collected that day?
I'm kind of barged out in my house, so I haven't really got much memorabilia. It's all tucked away in the garage. But funny enough, from that final, I managed to get a Bradford shirt. So I had a Swansea shirt, the shirt that I wore, signed by all the players. I managed to get a Bradford shirt that we played in the final. I got all of that signed from Bradford's end, and then obviously the medal in the middle. So it's kind of like a double pronged, yeah, but it's in the cold somewhere in the garage that's banished from the house.
No, it's time to put your foot down.
Interior designing, Clem. It doesn't fit in with it, does it?
No, wait a sec. I think you deserve a little sort of Alan Partridge style shrine. I think after what you've achieved in the game, Gary, you're at least allowed a wall in your own house. Put your foot down. Stamp your authority.
Now you've said that, Clem, I'm going to start sneaking things in one by one, I think. I think I'll try and do that.
I think you should do. Now, management-wise, which obviously sort of flips us onto your career since playing, but just Michael Laudrup on the sort of day and the build-up, how did he play it?
He was, I think from his whole tenure, he was always the calmest person you could probably meet. So chilled out and relaxed. And the best story about that cup run was probably the semi-final. We played the first leg against Chelsea away. And I remember being on the subs bench for that game. And to be honest, Chelsea were absolutely at us. And we managed to nick two goals against the run of play, really, to put us two up. But it was like literally they were attacking and peppering us and we were defending for our lives pretty much the whole game. And like we're all on the bench, and you know you're into it emotionally, aren't you? And we're all like every scary moment, like a ball across the box or a shot, and you know we're all up like thinking, oh no, clear it or just get rid of it or whatever it is. And I always remember just looking at Michael Laudrup for all of these moments. Not once did I see him with any anxiety or anything, just chilled. It was as if he knew, like, I've got this. Don't worry about it, lads. We'll be fine. And he was always that way, you know, very laid back and relaxed. And that probably, especially that year, probably transmitted into the team a little bit, where you know, going before that, where we were a very drilled team under Brendan and people like that, you know, very drilled and really on it and had that intensity, focus, you know, every single day in training, you know, where Michael come in very relaxed. But because we had that core plus good players that Michael brought in, I think it probably made everyone relax a little bit more, and probably that's what served us well in that season, where it was a good season. You know, we finished well in the league and obviously winning our first major trophy.
And as you went into your management career, had you soaked up a little bit from all those great names? You mentioned Brendan Rodgers there as well, obviously Robbie Martinez too. Was there a little bit of, not deliberately nicking, but clearly we evolve and take our influences on board, do we not?
Yeah, inevitably you learn from your environments that you've been in and the managers that you've been under. You learn what to do and, you know, the good things that a lot of them do. And then you also learn from the bad things that you think that they do, you know, or certain moments where you think, oh, that isn't quite maybe the right thing. And you try and then implement that into your own sort of thinking. And like we said, football's not, you know, you can't invent football again. There's certain parameters and foundations which are the same in every single team. So it's not copying, but you're obviously interpreting the same things. But yeah, you've got to have your own way. But learning from, you know, I'm very lucky in my career, not just at Swansea, but Southampton, in the rain at Southampton. And you know, we had some fantastic managers, your Glenn Hoddles, your Gordon Strachans, you know, your Graham Souneses as well, on top of Roberto's and Brendan's and Paolo's and Michael Laudrup. So all that blend, yeah, you can't help but take the good things and the bad experiences and try and like use that as experience more than anything, you know, try and learn from scenarios that maybe that you saw them in dealing with whilst you were in the changing room and try and take those experiences into your management.
Once Michael did depart and you were thrust in, were you in any way prepared, did you feel, or was it really the little duck feet trying to catch up as quickly as possible?
I was totally unprepared. Mentally, I was strong enough. But in terms of experience of management and coaching, of course not. You know, of course, I'd been doing my coaching badges from the age of 26. So, you know, gearing my mind that way. And obviously, I was very lucky under the management of like Brendan, who knew I was thinking more that way coming towards the end of my career, allowing me insight. You know, be able to have discussions and chats after trainings and why you would put a session on like that. Even after games where, you know, you came in at half time and you said that, what was the reason? So I was very lucky. But in terms of preparation, no, of course not. But I had the mentality, definitely, to be able to deal with that. And yeah, it was kind of a whirlwind. You know, I was 2 weeks away from, my wife had twins, my twin boys, already had a daughter. Premier League manager's job. We were still in Europe at the time, facing Napoli, and my first game was against Cardiff, bitter rivals, and I was 2 weeks away from having twins. So I can just remember the first 6 months of that job thinking, because it was every hour of every day, it was just, and I've said it, it's my hardest job, Swansea, because I was so emotionally attached to every single thing. I was just, after 6 months, I was just thinking, looking at the Roy Hodgsons and Arsene Wengers and the Sir Alex Fergusons, thinking, how do they do this into their 70s and 80s? I just thought, 6 months, I was thinking, I'm not going to last another year or two doing this. I felt so burnt out. But it's, yeah, you learn to deal with what's important and what's not. So, yeah, it's all an experience thing.
Yeah. But it's quite intoxicating as well, is it not? Because you've kept coming back in, haven't you, over those years? You've got back on again, dropped out for a little while, got back on again. So there's something about it that's addictive as well, Gary, isn't there?
Yeah, I think it's the love of football. You know, I've loved football like we all do from an early age. It's in your blood. And there's parts of, when you go into management, parts of the industry that you don't like. But football will always be loved. You know, that's the main thing. And, you know, it's been an experience. I've had ups and downs and things that I can control that I could have done maybe a little bit better. There's things I've done well. There's things that are out of my control. But that's what you learn about management. That is the brutal world of football management. And but yeah, I'm still young. I'm 42 and fit and ready. And, you know, this period here, which I've had off, it's been the first time where I've kind of catch 22. I've really enjoyed probably the first time spending quality time with my kids since I've started management. But also then you're missing the bug of football, you know, that training of football, a team and going out there on a Saturday or Tuesday, whenever it may be, and trying to pick your wits against the other team and win. So, yeah, looking forward to that challenge again sooner rather than later. But again, you're dictated by the environment and the industry, and we'll see what comes in the future.
Yeah, although I was looking at a couple of the championship in particular changes this week. Veljko Paunovic leaving Reading, 2 wins in the last 15, shipped to league high 62 goals, replaced by Paul Ince, out of management for 8 years. So I guess it just goes to show that anything goes and anything's possible in the world of football. Some might have thought Paul was never coming back.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's a little bit less than 8 years for myself. Yeah, look, it's what it is. You know, I've got great experience. I feel like I've done, you know, a good job in difficult circumstances in a lot of the clubs that I've been into, and try to steady those ships. And not everything's simple. Not everything's, you know, given to you and straightforward. You have to try and adapt and find a way through it. And I've always tried to do that. And you have to, you know, we've all got our own beliefs and what we would love the perfect team to do. And people call it philosophy now, but sometimes you're not allowed to do that. And you have to, as a manager, I think a good manager adapts to the situation and to the squad that he has and tries to go through it. So these last 7 or 8 years, you know, it's probably simply, it feels more like an apprenticeship. It feels like I've kind of completed my apprenticeship of management. And now I've got a good experience behind myself of different scenarios that I've had to face and the difficulties that I've had to face. And yeah, I'm ready for that next challenge. And I feel the benefit will be for that next challenge for myself and for whichever club that may be, that, you know, I've learned a lot in a short space of time. And yeah, looking forward to putting what I've learned into practice in the next opportunity.
Do you need to be strategic, though? And the longer you do it, the more you need to be careful to pick the right club and not be reactive and just snatch at the first thing.
There's definitely an argument for that. But then there's another argument where if you are waiting for the perfect scenario, then you'll be waiting forever.
Yeah.
You know, there's no club that's perfect. There's all sorts of clubs. And generally, when you are going into a club as a new manager, generally it's because there's a problem at that club or there's been a problem. Very rarely do you go into a club that's on the up already or in a really healthy position in terms of everything. It does happen, but that's definitely less common than what normal situations where that club's in trouble and it has difficulties. So if you're waiting for the perfect opportunity, you'll be waiting a long time. So you've got to try and take, I think what you do is you just try and assess the situation. Can I make that situation that club's in right now better, or give it an opportunity to be better right the here and now, the short term? And then of course, if you think yeah and you can do that, then that's pretty much where your starting point is. And as much as you think long term as well and what you could do in the future, which is you do have chats with those clubs when you go in there about the long term, but you know as well as with experience now that the short termism in football, especially management, is what it is, and that's what you have to focus on. But I generally make decisions on, can I affect it straight away? Can I do something that's going to help it straight away? If I don't feel that, I wouldn't take it. If I do, then I think that's what you try and base your decision on.
The other championship change this week is Darren Ferguson resigning after a run of night games without a win at the end of his third spell in charge of Peterborough United, during which he won 4 promotions. I mean, the other side of it is when you're in the role, do you sometimes just hit a point where no matter what you are doing, there doesn't seem to be a way out, Gary?
Yeah, it can happen. I think probably even more so now. I think more so with the outside influence. I think this, you know, social media has changed the world, you know, it has, and it's only going to change it even more. And I just think that's not the whole reason, but like in terms of voices from, you know, younger players now, the generation that are coming through now and are more common now, are very used to seeking approval from outside influences, where before it was not as much outside influence. You still, you know, you might have the crowd on a Saturday that would boo you off or be shouting at you as you come off the pitch. But as soon as you got off the pitch and you got home, apart from a newspaper that you might read, you never really got any, you know, influence from outside. Whereas now there's a lot of influence coming from outside. And I think players nowadays, because that's the way the world's moving, I think that's society as well, they're tending to probably need or seek approval from that more. I'm not saying it's the be all and end all, but when that, you know, you're coming off the pitch and you get on your phone and you're looking for how did I do? How do people think I done? I think that can maybe change the psyche a little bit. And then hearing different things, and that's why, you know, the rumours coming in and, you know, seeing, oh, we've only won 1 out of 6 or 7, that pressure then in your head starts building. As much as you try and control it as a manager from within and educate them on how that's not important, what's important is what we do and what we say to each other, it becomes more difficult. But Yeah, I've been in a couple of situations where, you know, probably my last club, where Sheffield Wednesday, where you're trying everything you possibly can, and it's just not registering, just not getting that rub of the green. It feels like the luck's against you in situations. You're playing well even, but the rub of the green goes against you. But it's part of it. It's part of the experience, and you come through it. Think, okay, that's the situation I got in. What would I do again? You know, can I see that coming quicker than what it did? In those type of situations. So yeah, it's all a process, but it's more difficult for managers now than probably ever.
I don't doubt that for a second. Either Thomas Tuchel or Jurgen Klopp's going to be very happy this week, because it's Chelsea who are currently third in the Premier League against Liverpool, currently second, joint most wins in the history of the tournament, along with Manchester City. Liverpool have won it 8 times. I mean, it's a great opportunity for one of those two and all those players, isn't it? Gary, I mean, the game is all about winning silverware.
Well, when you think of the dominance of Man City over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, to see these two in the final, I think soon as those two are in the final, my thought was, if the game's anything like their league game in January against each other, I don't even remember it, yeah. Stamford Bridge, the 2-2 draw.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably one of the best Premier League football games I've seen for a long, long time. The intensity, the pace of it, the quality that was on show. If we get anything like that for a final, then you're in for a real spectacle. So hopefully it's just like that game. Like I said, if anyone does get the opportunity to watch that game back, you know, I'd watch it. It's one of the best Premier League games I've seen for a long time.
Yeah. Very little to choose between them, presumably, on the day.
Yeah. Both know how to win. Both have quality squads. Both right up there in the league, obviously. Different styles as well. So like a boxing match, styles make games or make matches, and it's probably good style. Like I said, that game, the league game, the 2-2 draw was an unbelievable game. Two different styles, but the quality was unbelievable, the pace of it, the intensity. So, and again, not sitting on the fence, I couldn't call this game. I think if both teams turn up like that, you'd say probably Chelsea maybe favoured. They've played more finals, should we say, more recently than Liverpool, in the sense of, you know, winning, you know, they've had the Club World Cup and obviously Champions League winners more recently. Maybe if they got an edge because of that, but no, it's going to be a fantastic game.
Yeah, well, maybe as neutrals, we're just allowed, and that includes you as well at the moment, being out of the game, just allowed to sit back and enjoy a great game of football. Unless, of course, you're too busy searching through cardboard boxes in the garage to start your own personal Gary Monk shrine on the wall somewhere. Mate, it's been a lovely chat. It's been great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Glenn. Appreciate it, mate.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Your Sky Bet Championship fixtures this coming weekend. Early kickoff, 12:30 Saturday. Two of the current top six go head-to-head. That's Blackburn against QPR. Blackburn without Ben Brereton-Deers for the foreseeable future with these ankle ligament problems. Barnsley won two of their first 29 and have now won 2 in 3. Entertain Middlesbrough. Huddersfield head to Birmingham. Reading have won their last 2. Head to Blackpool. It's Bournemouth at home to Stoke. Fulham go to Cardiff. Sheffield United go to Millwall. Forest entertain Bristol City. And your Monday night game is West Brom, 1 point for a possible 12 under Steve Bruce, entertaining Swansea City. Into Sky Bet League One, where the game of the season to date in the division took place last weekend as Cheltenham Town came from 3-1 and 5-3 down at Wickham Wanderers to draw 5-5. That is 5-5. Alfie Mays scored 4 for Cheltenham, and his manager Michael Duff has, I'm pleased to say, now emerged from a darkened room after a good lie down to talk to us. Do you know what has been intriguing me? I want to know what you and Gareth Ainsworth said to each other as you trooped off after that.
What the hell was that? Basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there wasn't a lot of logic or any sort of commonsensical thinking to it. It was just a mad game. I think there was only 15 shots on target in the whole game. I think we had 9, they had 6. So to see 10 goals, it was a mad game that you can't explain.
Yeah. In your career and all that wonderful rise up the various tiers into the Premier League and everything you've done, have you been involved in many games like that?
I've not been involved in a game like that. We were trying to work it out. I think I've been involved in close to 1,000 games as a player, as a manager. I've not even come close to anything like that. I've conceded a five a few times, but we never scored at the other end. So it's it wasn't enjoyable as a manager, but I think they're the sort of games that supporters, you know, I think we had 400 there, which they, you know, they pay hard-earned cash. They travel up and down the motorways and hours and hours, and they watch some dross. There's no getting away from that. Not just our supporters, I mean, football supporters in general. So to be there for that one game, and probably the game of the season so far, but there's always two or three a year, and you always want to be, I was there at that moment. And we had a really pleasing 0-0 draw last night as well, which I was really pleased about.
You miserly. I was looking for the right word to call you. I'm going to pick my words carefully. I'll tell you what, the other thing I'm intrigued about as well is, did the euphoria of the comeback mean that you didn't get stuck into your defence for their frailties in letting in five for the third time this season?
Like I said, I think we've conceded five twice. In the last two times we played, we've conceded five. We've only conceded six shots on target in both games. So I'm going to blame it on the goalkeeper coach and not the defending.
Is that the entirety of your answer? Because it was very diplomatic. Seriously, when you go in, are you so full of the euphoria that you're not, that's not the time to get stuck into the fact that you let five in?
No, we're a team trying to stay up. We've gone away to a team that were in the Championship last year. We've taken the lead. We've given up three poor goals in a five-minute period. We've got ourselves back, got them in at half-time, got them back to 3-3, and then given up two goals in 22 seconds of open play. So the spirit and the togetherness and the belief within the group to come back again and to nearly nick it right at the end as well, that's what we went on. You can try and think logically all the time, but sometimes you just got to go with a feeling. And the emotion of it, and the emotion and the feeling was unbelievable spirit and togetherness and determination and giving everything for each other to get a point at a very good team.
How do you assess your own readjustment, as in getting used to League One after winning League Two last season?
We think we've done okay. First and foremost, we know where we are in the food chain. We know we were favourites for relegation and all that sort of stuff. We want to be competitive. That was the first and foremost. Can we stay in the league and can we just try and be competitive? So I think in the first half of the season, we did okay. I think in the second half of the season, we've shown improvement again. So and on the first cycle of games we played, you know, we got beat 5-0 by Sunderland. It could have been 10. Rotherham beat us comfortably. Wigan beat us comfortably without getting out of second gear. And we had quite a few of those games against the big boys where we basically just weren't good enough. In the second cycle, we've beaten Sunderland. We drawn 0-0 with Wigan. We got beat 1-0 at Rotherham, but it was a foul in the build up to the goal. So we've shown signs. Wickham beat us comfortably and we've just drawn 5-5 with them away from home. So I think we've shown signs of improvement and adapting and maybe accepting that we are good enough to more than compete at the league without getting too far ahead of ourselves, because first and foremost, the challenge is to stay in the league.
I wonder what the key is to the stability at your club. I mean, actually, I guess you're a main element of that as well, aren't you? Because you can see the madness that is going on all around the EFL, people getting 20-game tenures. We know we've had five managers move on this week. It appears very calm on the surface, Michael.
No, it is. The football club know what we are. One of the reasons why I took the job, I had an affinity with the club, and there was lots of other reasons why I moved to the area and all things like that. But they're not historically a sacking club, so I didn't win in the first 10 games. Which, coming from a 23s background, could have quite easily been in the modern climate. Well, that's it, you're out. And then that's my career as a manager done, because if you fail in your first job, it's hard to get back in. We've just come off a run of 12 games without a win. And there's pressure from within, but there was no sort of real noises, because the club know that we did unbelievably well to get into League One. So just to assume that, well, we should be mid-table next year, because it's not based on attendances, it's not based on the budget, it's not based on history or the size of the club. So we know what we are. We know just trying to be competitive. Can we stay in the league? And we've shown that we can do that, because the weirdness of football is, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we'd not won in 12 and now we've only lost one in 10. So it's the perception, but that's where the owners are good and realistic, and supporters of that as well. You know, they've had to suffer some tough times at this club, so just enjoying the moment, enjoying going to places like Wickham and Sunderland and Ipswich and places like that. And that calmness helps in terms of recruitment and things, because you don't have to panic. You can plan a little bit long term. When I say long term, I mean probably window to window, which is long term in football.
Talking about long term, 3.5 years in the job, 10th longest serving EFL manager.
I knew I was here for 3.5 years. I didn't realise I was 10th on the list. It's scary. It is scary. You do wonder why we go into it. But as we said right at the start of the interview, why do supporters travel up and down the motorway to watch? It's because it's in you. It's a passion. It's something. It's the only thing I know. So it's either that or get a real job. But I'm not sure I could get a job that would interest me at all. So people have said it for years. It's madness. It's very rarely that there's any success when you chop and change and chop and change. But for some reason, clubs still do it. Supporters still want managers out after 3 games without a win. And it seems to get worse with the social media. And now it seems to fan reaction, good and bad. You know, you're never as good as what you think you are. You're never as bad as what you think you are. But I don't quite know why. I do know why, because people want instant success. But you take the commonsensical approach and it's like, well, no one that seems to. You look at the top 10 managers, I'd imagine people like Sean Dyche, Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola, Gareth Ainsworth, there's been a bit of stability. And I understand in this job you need to get enough results. But as soon as a manager shows signs of, he doesn't become a bad manager in 3 or 4 weeks. So I'm on the other side of the fence, I get that. I'm on the more rational side of it because I'm in it and I want people to give other people a chance and myself to get given a chance. Because at a lot of other football clubs, 12 games without a win, you're out the job. I don't think I've become a bad manager. Well, I don't think I'm a brilliant manager anyway, but I don't think I've become a terrible manager in 12 games when we've drawn 8 and lost 4.
I mean, just to stress, that was EFL I was talking. You're in your 10th longest serving within the EFL. So I'd extrapolated the Premier League out of that. Would having that environment right and having that calmness around you, clear parameters, etc., would that govern any future career move for you? Will you be one of these guys that conceivably will stay a long time at a club like Cheltenham for the reasons that I've just said? You don't want to get into one of these environments that's one of those, you know, hiring and firing clubs.
I think everyone at the football club, I'm not saying anything I've not already told them, I'm ambitious the same I was as a player. I want to manage at the highest level. It took me 31 years as a player to get to the Premier League. So I'm not in a rush. I'm prepared to do the hard yards and to learn the trade and to wait for the right opportunity. So it's not like I haven't applied for any jobs, but I'm not ringing my agent saying, get me this job, get me that job. I've not done that once. I believe that I'm happy where I am. I'm learning my trade. But that doesn't mean that I want to be at Cheltenham Town manager for the next 10 years. And they know that. Now, I might be the Cheltenham challenger for that next 10 years, and that doesn't mean that I failed, because football changes quickly. But the long-term plan has always been get to the highest level you can. And I might be at the highest level I ever get to right now, but it won't be through the lack of working hard and trying to improve myself and trying to learn all the time.
Great to talk to you, mate. And I think we need to congratulate you you and Gareth Ainsworth, because I often say football is, of course, the entertainment industry. And boy, did you do it with bells and whistles last weekend. But I would suggest you don't do it too many times in the season. Otherwise, you'll do yourself a mischief, won't you?
Yeah, well, I'm sure these grey hairs that I've got now, that definitely wasn't as many at the start of that game.
Great to talk to you, Michael. Thank you.
Cheers, Clem.
Elsewhere in Sky Bet League One, the now former Morecambe manager, Stephen Robinson, said the opportunity to sign a 2.5-year deal with SPL side St Mirren was too good to turn down. He departed from the relegation strugglers after compensation was agreed. And Oxford United say they've been overwhelmed with the emotional response to the death at the age of just 50, a former winger, club legend and cult hero at his hometown club, Joey Beecham. I'm sure that Oxford will be paying tribute to Joey as they entertain Cambridge this coming weekend. Morecambe entertain Ipswich. Wickham, just 3 points from their last possible 18. They head to Accrington. Michael Duff's Cheltenham are at home to Crewe. MK Dons won five of their last seven in an unbeaten run, entertained Bolton. It's Plymouth who are fifth against the leaders Rotherham, 9 points clear of third with a game in hand. And probably your game of the day is second place Wigan against Sunderland, have dropped to sixth and are 10 points behind Wigan, who have three games in hand.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Into Sky Bet League 2, where Leighton Orient have sacked manager Kenny Jackett after a fourth consecutive defeat left them just 5 points above the relegation zone. They were seventh in early December, but have only taken 2 points from their 10 games since. And Carlisle United have made their second managerial change of the season. Keith Millen has departed after 6 wins in his 22 games in charge. Only 3 points from their last 8 games means they have dropped into the relegation zone. Those two actually play each other this coming weekend. One man, though, who is back in the game after a 4.5 months absence since he left his home city club, Newport County, is Michael Flynn at Walsall, whose first game in charge ended Forest Green's 19-match unbeaten run, the longest in league football this season. I suspect, Flinny, the second will not be remembered with such fondness.
No, definitely won't. You know, we were outstanding on Saturday against Forest Green. Put in so much effort. You know, they stuck to the game plan. We played some good football and thoroughly deserved the win. We started brightly again last night against Swindon. You know, looked the better team in the first half an hour. And then as soon as the first goal went in, we fell apart. And that's, you've got to give credit to Swindon as well, because they were clinical. But over the last 3 games, 6 points out of 9 against the top two, and the Swindon team were, you know, looking to make it into the top three, then, you know, it's there are positives to take from it.
When you have a game like the Swindon 5-0 defeat, I mean, does everything you've planned in your head over those months out, and you've thought, well, when I go back in, I'll do X and Y, I'll change that from how I used to do it at Newport, does it go straight out of the window? You're just purely acting off gut feel, instinct, and I guess the propensity to want to shout at the boys and really lay down a marker, or am I wrong?
No, I'll be honest with you, I didn't. You know, as pleased as I was Saturday, I didn't get too carried away. And as upset as I was last night, I'm not going to get too down. You know, I've got to be the leader. I've got to keep the confidence up, or get their confidence up as well. And I've got to show them the way. And feeling sorry for yourself is not going to get any of us anywhere where we want to be. And, you know, we've got to move on. We do our debrief. We've looked at things and where we can improve. But it's also important in those times as well that we show them the things that they did do well last night. Second half, there wasn't many, I'll be honest with you, but there were some good moments in the first half that, you know, they need to keep them in fresh in their minds.
Listen, I went to see Steve Bruce a couple of weeks ago, and it was, I visited him the day after West Brom had lost in his first game at Sheffield United. And there was this camera angle, I was watching it on the TV, there was a camera angle of him standing there in the dugout. And I said, what, you know, when it's not going your way, and he had his captain sent off halfway through the first half, I said, what are you thinking? Because the comparison between being in the thick of it and the pressure, Mike, v being at home, looking after the kids, you know, resting, it's enormous. Did you have a little moment like that, you know, in the Swindon game where you thought, ugh, what have I done this to myself for?
No, but listen, football is a strange game. You know, it's why it's the most loved game worldwide. Anything can happen. Anybody can beat anybody. But it's addictive, and I can't help being addicted to football. And, you know, I had my time out where I refreshed, managed to do, you know, self-evaluation, improving and things that I need to improve on, you know, in terms of my presentation, you know, how I analyze games. You know, I got a chance to do a lot of that. I was watching game after game after game, you know, and it was good. because I was able to do it without the emotion attached to it, you know, and obviously we all get emotional at football games. So it was good. I managed to get some time away with the children that I've never been able to do, even as a young adult, you know, through playing as well. So we managed to go to Lapland with a family, which, again, you know, it's it keeps the wife happy. And I was ready to go again. So I wasn't thinking that last night. You know, I did feel sorry for the supporters, if I'm honest, because after such a bright start, we did let ourselves down a bit. And, you know, that's the frustrating thing. But look, that's why I've been given the job, because things have not been going to plan. And I've got to make sure they do from now to the end of the season and then put my stamp on it in the summer.
It's interesting, isn't it, when you have that timeout, because there's no direct time limit on it, i.e. you don't quite know where you're going to get back in and when. I wondered whether a blank sheet of paper to do all the things you haven't been able to do when you're in the game, I mean, it can be a lovely luxury that we all think we want, but it can be a scary place as well, because then you have to find your own structure and self-discipline to stay on it.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm a dab hand at hoovering and cleaning the services and washing. You know, the washing machine, I know every icon on the dial. So, yeah, there's only so much of that I could take. And look, like I said, I managed to recharge and I was ready to go again. So it felt the right time. You know, the chairman, Lee, here was so passionate about the club. Jamie Fullerton, the technical director, was, you know, straight, honest, and there was a clarity to you know, where they want to go, and that whether you agree with something, as long as I'm giving an honest answer, that's all I want. You know, whether it's a yes or a no, you just want to know where you stand, and, you know, I felt that I could have this here.
I mean, you talked about honesty. I think I know you well enough to ask you a straightforward question. You were linked with jobs like Barnsley with Cardiff. Were you expecting to have to come back in Sky Bet League 2?
No. That's me being honest. You know, there were a few offers I had. I was close to some bigger jobs, you know, one in the SPL as well. Got, you know, close. And, you know, my next step ideally would have been, you know, a League One club. But there was a couple of League One clubs I didn't even apply for because I didn't feel that they were the right ones. And, you know, it was the wrong timing, or I didn't feel it was the right infrastructure to help me progress and the team progress. So, you know, with Walsall, even though they haven't had the best results this season, I felt that that infrastructure was here and it was the right time to come back in.
And certainly a League One club in waiting based on historical weight of the modern era, Mike, as well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I remember knocking them out of the FA Cup for Newport when they were in League One. So that's not too long ago. You know, the training facilities are excellent. You know, it's a lovely stadium. It's a good following with the supporters. The club's well run, financially stable. So there's a lot of positives. You know, we just got to get where it matters on the pitch. We've got to get it improved and ready to kick on.
How different is this from your point of view, bearing in mind it was your home city club previously? So there's an element there, isn't there? There's a personal passion. There's an affinity with the supporters. So how much are you coming out of your comfort zone and having to add a different dimension going into a club where you're not so linked to the fan base?
Well, first thing, I can say I've always had a very good relationship with the fans for every club I've played for. So, you know, I'm somebody who gives my all, whether it's on the pitch or in the dugout. But it can work both ways. You know, the intensity of managing your hometown club and living around the area, you know, going to the shops with your children and your wife, or going for a meal, you know, you're constantly getting asked questions and spoke to, which is not a problem, by the way. But, you know, it is 24/7, you know, talking about Newport and football. So, you know, that can have his own, you know, his demands, I will say, his own demands on it. You know, but also as well, you know, you do feel appreciated, you know, especially when things like they were at Newport, everything was going well, you know, throughout my tenure, the cup runs, the great escape, the playoff finals. So there's a lot of good memories being made. Now it's, you know, it's down to me to try and create these moments, and Walsall fans will be no different. They appreciate when they see people giving it all and you know, their team being successful. So I'm sure they'll get behind me just as the Newport fans did.
How does Dr. Flynn's sort of assessment over the first couple of days at a new club work? Are you in every nook and cranny, stopping every person you meet for a brief one-on-one chat? Have you only had time to deal with the first team so far? Have you been at the stadium a lot? How have you worked it? What have you been up to the first few days?
First and foremost, I've tried to meet everybody who's associated with the club, i.e., you know, the workers, the staff here, both at the stadium and at training ground. You know, taking on their knowledge, because they got more knowledge of the football club than I have, what they felt was going wrong, the good things that, you know, we can keep and keep implementing. So you have got to have that local input as well. You know, our chef, Mandy, here, she's excellent. She's seen it, seen loads of things happening throughout the years. So she's a good person to talk to. And the food's good as well, so I've got to keep it sweet.
Yeah.
But yeah, they, you know, it's at the minute, because we had the Saturday Tuesday game, we haven't even been able to train properly as well, because the storm last week, couldn't do much on the Monday because the amount of statistics they smashed at the Forest Green game with the high speed running, total distance, etc. So, you know, we had to be careful with them on Monday. Again, then we're playing another good team, Swindon. So it's a difficult one today. They've been in for their recovery day. But hopefully then, after next week, we'll have a free week and we can really get to work on the training ground.
Listen, you've got a little bit of a buffer above the relegation zone. Longer term potential, I mean, objectives this season, what? Try and get yourselves as high up the table as you can, then regroup, lay your own template, go again next season?
Yeah, listen, you know, I don't care, you know, that people, they possibly, not possibly get into the playoffs, you know, until it's mathematically uncertain, then you've got to keep trying. You've got to try and win every game. Everybody will say that. And there's no team in the world or no manager in the world that goes out to try and lose a game. So everybody will be saying the same. But I want to finish the season on a high. And then next season, we can really look towards the top half and hopefully having a push for the playoffs, providing we do the right things until the end of the season.
And in terms of that self-reflection, what's the one thing you're going to demand of yourself? What's the new addition to your toolkit you're going to take going forward?
Well, look, like I said, it's about taking the emotion out of it. I've managed to do that really well so far. And, you know, I don't mind.
But I love that about you, Flinny. I love how passionate you are. I love that quirkiness and that, you know, telling it like it is aspect. You see that as detrimental to your life?
No. I mean, when you're speaking to the players after the game, I'll tell them how it is, you know. But for me, the emotion will be out of it. As in terms, I am delivering the message that I want to get across to them in no uncertain terms. But for me, the emotion is out of it, you know, because you can take things too personally at times, and players are no different. You know, managers have done it in the past. They take things personally, but, you know, I'm here to win football matches. And if I've got to upset people along the way, I will do.
But you can do that as Mike Flynn as well and still be the authentic you.
I'll always be me. I'll always be me. I'll never change. You know, I've got my key core values, you know, respect, hard work, togetherness, and they will stay. What I'm saying is that the emotion will be taken out of it when you know, I'm having to get new players in or release players. That will be a lot clearer And I'll be clear in my head as well with the recruitment side of it.
Yeah. Final question. I'm enthralled to see you with your new tracksuit on and things. It just takes a little bit of getting used to. Does the kit man have a right old scramble when a new manager turns up? Is he going around looking in the sort of discarded bin? Is he trying to get your predecessor's name scratched off and pull the lettering off to give you the same one? Or is there a fresh bit of kit just waiting there for you?
I was going to say, I walked in the first day. He's got a heat lamp on the initial part where he's trying to get the old initials off. Look, it's a funny time of the season to come in. The transfer window's closed. A lot of the kits are nearly old or sold out. So I think he's been beg, stealing and borrowing to get what he can for me.
You mean you've got a girl's extra small top and a large man's extra, extra, extra large trouser or something like that? You're not going to do a Steve Evans running down the touchline and your pants around your ankles, are you?
No, I won't do that, but I've had to give the extra, extra large to Wayne Atswell, my assistant. So he won't be happy with that, but yeah, he's... We got some gym work to do, me and him.
Well, listen, so you've got the chef on side, but now you've just insulted your long-term assistant. Listen, great to talk to you. Great to have you back.
Thanks, Glenn. Really appreciate it, mate. I hope you're well.
Your Sky Bet League 2 fixtures this coming weekend. Mansfield currently in seventh. Travel to Bradford City. Bristol Rovers against Exeter. Bristol Rovers 3 points off the playoffs now. Exeter in fourth. It's Colchester against Oldham. 3 wins and unbeaten 5 since John Sheridan returned and out of the bottom two. The leaders, Forest Green, head to Crawley. Newport against Tranmere is 8th against 3rd. Tranmere have dropped from 2nd. Northampton up to 2nd. Travel to Rochdale. It's Sutton United against Scunthorpe. Swindon against Salford. And Mike Flynn's Walsall entertain Hartlepool United. That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Michael Flynn, to Michael Duff, and to Gary Monk. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. I'm Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.